Chapter 12, Whiteboard Economics.
Most of us are not the financial accountants or wizards the traditional business world deems worthy and capable of running complex spreadsheets or even forecasting hardcore numbers. So it's not surprising if you get a little bit uptight even talking about numbers. Sometimes you might work harder trying to convince somebody else with passion and decibels that you don't need the numbers. And you spend more time doing that than it would take to just get some simple numbers in place. Without a deep knowledge of finance, the financial part of business often scares people, makes them feel like they're non-business people. I mean, even the terms, their abbreviations can seem pretty scary. EBITDA, ROI, P&L, ROQ, RO, AEIO, whatever. For business think, we're just going to strip away some of the intimidating parts of the detailed functional expertise that's required to do corporate finance and accounting. So this is our Business Think 101 course. It's not intended to give you everything that you need. See, our approach is to do what we call whiteboard or back-of-the-envelope economics. We're not going to pretend that this is a rigorous financial analysis. You're just grabbing the nearest whiteboard, a piece of paper, a notepad, a scratch paper, and you're just jotting down some rough ballpark ideas about the size of the numbers. Now, let's just think about this. If somebody told you that $300 or $400 had been wasted in your department, you probably wouldn't think much of it. If they told you $300,000 or $400,000 had been wasted, you might be tempted to take a closer look. Now just imagine, let's say that you decided to take a closer look, got into the numbers, and you found that instead of $400,000, the estimate was really closer to $375,000. Would you be ticked off? Not likely. You still would have been made aware of a nearly $400,000 problem, and you would have at least had an option to choose to fix it. That's what we're doing with whiteboard economics. We're going to get to know how hard and how close of a look a problem or opportunity deserves. If it's potentially big, there will be plenty of time to get some help along the way from people whose job it is to get all the precise numbers and make sure they jive. So for right now, in this part of the process, let's just do some quick math. Now, when you're doing whiteboard economics, learn to use words and phrases like ballpark or rough estimate, more or less, best guess. You'll just want to know if the problem involves tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions, tens of millions, who knows? What's the order of magnitude? And we're just looking for, again, a rough estimate. See, the size of the solution should at least be close to the size of the problem you want to solve or the opportunity you want to pursue. So do your best to turn all of the non-financial figures that you'll gather and turn that into money. Don't stop with percentages or ratios just because they're numbers. Your goal here, because you're trying to build a business case, is to convert those non-financial figures, the percentages, etc., into their cash equivalents. If you miss the conversion, you may miss knowing the financial impact of solving the problem. You also won't be able to give the information to those that are making decisions about whether there will be a good return on the investment. And consequently, not having a business case, you might lose out to other opportunities that do. Now, when you convert hard evidence into impact, it answers the questions, how big is the impact if you decide to do something about it? And what is it costing you by not solving that problem? You see, if the problem is never fixed, worst case scenario, then what happens? If you never adopt this strategy, what are the implications? What will it cost the company? Or on the other side, if everything goes right, best case scenario, what is it that you gain? It's the justification that proves you should act. That's why you hardwire a measurable alert into your nervous system. And when you actually have evidence, whether it's hard or soft, then convert that evidence into impact. And here's how you do that. We're going to teach you five questions, and we call them the five golden questions. When your measurable alert goes off, it automatically triggers these five questions. Here they are. 1, how do you measure it? 2, what is it now? 3, what would you like it to be? 4, what's the value of the difference? And 5, what's the value of that difference over time? For example, imagine you're a director in a travel services company, and during a meeting, one of your colleagues brings an idea out. The colleague says this, "Hey, moving our travel services online would make it easier for our customers to purchase by giving them better and faster access, and it would increase our market share." If I was to apply the 5 golden questions to this statement, these would be my questions. How do you measure market share for this particular product? Now, just imagine your colleague responded with, "Well, percent of market ownership for corporate travel clients." Okay, now that I understand that, I could ask, "Well, what is it now?" "Roughly 8%. "Oh, okay. And what would you like it to be once you've given them better, quicker access online?" "Well, we'd like it to be 12, 13%. "Oh, okay, this is very helpful. So what does each measure market share for this particular product?" Now, just imagine your colleague responded with, "Well, percent of market ownership for corporate travel clients." Okay, now that I understand that, I could ask, "Well, what is it now?" "Roughly 8%. "Oh, okay. And what would you like it to be once you've given them better, quicker access online?" "Well, we'd like it to be 12, 13%. "Oh, okay, this is very helpful. So what does each market share for this particular product?" Now, just imagine your colleague responded with, "Well, percent of market ownership for corporate travel clients." Okay, now that I understand that, I could ask, "Well, what is it now?" "Roughly 8%. "Oh, okay. And what would you like it to be once you've given them better, quicker access online?" When the value of the difference is immediately apparent in money, by the way, you can drop some of these questions. You wouldn't have to ask, for example, "What's the value of the difference?" For example, one of your colleagues from sales makes an observation. "Well, not having account management software is hurting our sales." "Well, what are sales now?" "500 million. "Well, let's say we had account management software that was really doing the job. What would we expect sales to be then?" "550 million. See, that's where you don't have to ask, "Well, what's the value of the difference?" It becomes obvious. So move to the next question. Okay, so over the next 3 to 5 years, you'd be looking at revenue growth of 150 to 250 million. The real art form is in quantifying the impact when the value of the difference isn't immediately apparent in dollars. Now, this will require that you ask a few more questions, and it may not be as apparent and as easy as it sounds in these examples. For instance, if someone believes the key is quality, you would ask, "Well, how do you measure quality? Number of rejections per 1,000 units. What's the current rejection rate?" 10 per 1,000 units. Well, let's say that we were successful with this TQM project. What would you expect it to be? 5 per 1,000 units. What's the value of that difference? Well, big bucks. And that's the problem. You've just asked the other person to do a lot of math in their head, and they may not be able to. A lot of people get scared when it comes down to working with numbers. So chunk it down. Take it one step at a time and take it together.
I'd like to emphasize that point that Dave just mentioned about working on this stuff together. If you want your colleagues to feel involved, that they have some ownership in the impact, do some of those whiteboard economics or math together to come up with the amount. Involve other people, especially if they're from other functions or departments with different agendas and different budgets. Don't sit there with your calculator and spend 5 minutes punching buttons and announce, "Whoa, your department has a $3 million problem." Now at that point, they don't have a $3 million problem. Even if your numbers are right, you and your calculator have a $3 million problem. So work on the problem or opportunity with them, not for them. They need a sense of ownership from the beginning. Don't start excluding them when you get to impact. Now, if the numbers come up big, don't come off like you're some big bad business geek. At this point, it will be best if you fall on the conservative side with your estimate. As others take a look at what you've done, it will be better if they think you've been conservative rather than overreaching. So you might say something like this: that seems like a large number. Is that even realistic? Is it possible we could be overstating the impact here? Now that gives everyone a chance to modify it or to come up with a number that everyone buys into. Remember, the goal is not to get them. The goal is to get real about the impact with a close sense of how big the number really is. When they do come up with the number they feel better about, you can still ask. You know, as we share our business case with the other people that need to buy into this, are they likely to start nodding their heads in agreement, buying into this, or are they likely to be wondering what we were smoking when we came up with it? See, if the numbers are still too high, modify them. If the impact still seems big enough, you should go ahead. If it doesn't, it may be over. Now, to ease your mind a little more about the science, quote-unquote science, of finance and economics, here's an example of a hardcore financial analysis we learned from our combined years in business school. Here's my personal example. When I had my own company and we were starting to get investors, we had to learn a little bit about the finance of getting investors. And here's what I learned about something that sounds big and bad called discounted cash flow analysis. Here's the basics of it. Let's say you have three proposed ideas, projects, proposals, business plans, three of anything really, and you have to figure out which one you should do for the best return on investment. After all, that's what investors and shareholders want to hear about. First, you project what you expect the revenues to be over the next 5 or 10, 15 years. Now, how do you think people come up with those numbers? They might look at market expansion, historic revenue growth, marketing spending levels, increasing customer demand, whatever. And even with all the data, they still have to do the best they can to make an educated guess, a guess as to what's possible in the future. Now, the next step is to project the costs out 5, 10, 15 years into the future. So maybe you expect some kind of process efficiency, or there may be some potential increases in costs, yada, yada, yada. Again, it's a guess. So far, the numbers we have are really hardcore, right? Really precise. Now, if you're wondering what the answer to that question is, it's no, it's not precise. And then next, you simply subtract the cost you projected from the revenue you projected, and you have a new number that may represent gross margins or profit. Then you multiply those profits by the average weighted cost of capital, which is another guess. Nobody knows what that is. So you have a stream of guesses about revenue, and you subtract the stream of guesses about costs, and you divide that by a guess of the weighted cost of capital, and you come up with the net present value. When you look at the numbers, what happens if you don't like what you see? You change your guesses. That's how you get investors. And that's what many people call hardcore financial analysis. And the only thing that makes this more rigorous than whiteboard economics is that they plug it into a spreadsheet. Oh, I forgot. And someone with financial credentials waves their magic wand over it. Not exactly as intimidating as it seems, is it? Now, nobody's pretending that these guesses are reality. As abnormal as it sounds, the exercise does in fact have a purpose: to take guesses and opinions about the future and talk about them in the common denominator of money. So let's go back to the Business Think Mirror, this time on calculating the impact. Number one, I estimate the financial impact of not solving problems or creating new opportunities. Number two, I involve people in estimating the financial impact of problems or opportunities in the company. Number three, once I've made a decision, I feel confident in presenting a strong business case for my recommendations.